Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
This is Radio City Talk.
Hello, welcome. It's Mental Health Monday. It's Radio City Talk. My name's Mick Coyle. At 6th of November today, at this time next week, producer Lizzie and I will be jetting off down to London. We're not really jetting, we're going on the train, for the Mind Media Awards, which are taking place in Leicester Square. Really looking forward to that. I'll tell you all about the details because we're lucky enough to be nominated for an award in that one at the end of the podcast. Thanks for downloading the podcast. More than 40 episodes now of Mental Health Monday to download. Head to our website to get all the details, radiocitytalk.co.uk. If you're listening on the podcast, if you're kind enough to share it on your social media, Facebook and Twitter, that will be absolutely wonderful. If you would like to subscribe to the podcast, you should be able to find all the details on your podcast suppliers. A couple of guests on the show today. Emma Cuddy wants to share her story. She had a physical health condition which, unbeknownst to her, was starting to have an impact on her mental health. She works for a health screening company and her health has changed now beyond all recognition. She used to suffer from anxiety. She shares her story. First and foremost, though, we're going to hear from Lynn Collins from the Northwest TUC. Now, Lynn, always a great speaker and always a great contributor to the programme. She was on with her daughter a few months ago. She's been looking at a couple of stories related to mental health and our well-being within the workplace. There's a couple of studies and stories which have been doing the rounds recently about the number of children who are being dragged into poverty, another 700,000. What does that mean for the mental well-being for those children and also their parents? But also a story out from Action for Children, taking a look at loneliness and the scourge of loneliness, which is huge right across the country, the impact that it can have as well on parents and children, and particularly those parents after the child is newborn. So as a parent tries to find their way in the world, loneliness can be a huge factor. So Lynn was in the studio. She picked out those two stories to discuss on Mental Health Monday.
Radio City Talk, tackling the stigma.
There's a couple of stories about parents and children, sort of, you know, that are tangentially linked, really. One in The Guardian talking about 700,000 extra children going to be pushed into poverty than was expected. And this is because of a combination of low wage growth, which we've talked about, but also the benefit system changes, the move to universal credit and the impact that that's having on families. And then alongside that, I think there's a story about parents being lonely and when you become a new parent, not having the kind of support networks perhaps you need. And I think this is another one of those things that I think has crept up on us. And is, you kind of think in the age of technology, you know, what's caused it? You know, what's caused it? But if you look alongside what's happened to some of our public services. So, you know, when I had my kids, there was Sure Start centres, Labour introduced in the 1990s. And there was always something going on at a Sure Start centre, a drop-in, a mother and baby group, kind of baby yoga. There was always something. So you could get out the house and you could find something affordable to do locally. But a lot of those support mechanisms for parents have gone now. And it can be quite an isolating thing, especially if you've always worked, to take time out of work. You're on maternity leave. You're obviously very busy because you've got a new baby. But it's kind of a total different environment that you're used to. And reconnecting with fellow parents, or, you know, making those connections can be really difficult.
I think it's interesting that we look at that figure about 700,000 extra children being pushed into or dragged into poverty. Actually, what we're talking about from a loneliness point of view is almost like it's a mental health poverty, isn't it? Because actually, they don't care whether or not you've got money in that regard as well, although money can be a factor. The issue of loneliness, you know, if you have got a newborn who is crying all the time, you feel like you can't take out. It doesn't matter really if you live in a big mansion. What you're doing is you're stuck in a room with a child, whether you live in a council flat, whether you live in a mansion. It sort of doesn't care, if you like, although your options might be different if you've got a few more quid.
Yeah, and that's where the support services that we provide as a society are really important. It's the same with older people. You know, there's often reports, isn't there, that an increase in loneliness amongst older people. Well, the services that we would provide, you know, coffee mornings, those kind of drop-in services that people could readily access at a local venue, they're all going because they're non-statutory services. So the impact of, you know, we've seen the impact of the cuts that on local government sort of filtering through the system. And what we're seeing now is a kind of a bit of a chasm opening up in terms of the support that we provide people who feel socially isolated for whatever reason. You know, if you've got money, there's probably, you know, a private baby yoga class you can go to, or there's probably things you can do. But even if you think with slightly older children, we've got free museums and galleries. I think that's the best thing ever, because that means that you can always take your child somewhere and do something interesting and exciting with them, and it doesn't cost you. It costs you your bus fare to get there. You know, my fear is that we'll start to reintroduce things like charges for museums and galleries, and that will close yet another door. You know, I think the opportunities to do educational activities, to get involved in some of the activities they have at the Walker Art Gallery are great, and they should be there for everyone.
I agree, but I would also say, you know, this poll by Action for Children found a quarter of people felt cut off from friends since becoming a parent for the first time. There's that idea of, well, at least I'm getting out and about and I'm engaging and my kids are engaging in things. But also, you know, we're talking about friends there, and that's that human contact that you have when you speak to, I don't know, many times I go home from work and I'd see my wife and I go, what have you been up to? And she'll go, nothing. I haven't spoken to a human being apart from this newborn baby who isn't necessarily, you know, coming back with much of interest. So there's almost a responsibility you almost have to take as a friend towards somebody and realise that they've not just grown another head.
Absolutely.
And, and I think people do this all the time. We had examples of friends who did it with us where we said, well, if they're not going to contact us anymore because they simply think that we've got kids and we don't want to speak to them, well, that's really their loss. We'll almost just leave them to it, because really, you almost need to double up when someone becomes a parent for the first time. Because, I mean, if they say it's going easy, they're lying. It's a nightmare when you first become a parent, isn't
absolutely
it? And that's the point where you almost need to knock on the door and go, do you want me to go and do your week shopping for you? Do you want me to, you know, clean those pots?
Yeah.
And they'll always say no, but just do it anyway.
Yeah,
because actually,
well,
it'll make a huge difference.
My kids are 15 and 17, and I'm just starting to reconnect with friends again now that they've got to that age. But there is a big chasm there that the backfill was our society. We had a society that provided support mechanisms. We had, you know, in those early days, you'd have a school, you'd have a health visitor who'd knock on your door, who'd, you know, be looking holistically at what support you needed. You'd have regular visits from your midwife up to the, you know, the few weeks after birth. Because of the real cutbacks in those services as well, people aren't necessarily getting that level of support. They aren't getting the professionals as well as the friends who can maybe flag up there's a little bit of help needed here, and deal with it quickly when it's needed.
And I think loneliness as well used to be one of those things you kind of, oh, he's a bit lonely. Likes to spend time by himself. He's quiet, as you know, he's always happy when he's on his own in his bedroom or whatever it is. Actually, when you start to sort of factor in children and factor in other environmental things, and you start considering mental health around loneliness, suddenly it does become a much bigger issue. There were figures out just very recently saying that loneliness was was more likely to cause a death than diabetes, it was, like, because of the impact it can have on your mental health, particularly when you're older, this was. And I wonder whether or not loneliness will become, you know, the next issue, if you like, that needs to be tackled. It's relatively easy to tackle if you really think about it. It's simply about making those connections. But if you don't make those connections, it's a real breakdown in what we are as human beings, isn't it?
And the other people who can perhaps help in some of these circumstances are employers, because often a woman will be on maternity leave, and within the regulations that govern maternity leave, there's things called keeping in touch days. Now, it may be the last thing you want is your employer keeping in touch with you when you've got a newborn screaming baby. But the employer does have some responsibilities to make sure that when you want to go back to work, that transition back into work is a happy one and a safe one, and is done effectively. So, you know, I think employers perhaps need to think about the way in which they interact with their staff who are on maternity leave, and find a kind of a comfortable level for everyone that means that you still keep that kind of contact. And if your mates are at work and you're not seeing your mates at work on a daily basis, then you are going to feel isolated.
Yeah, and you know, a few days away from work, great. A week away from work, 2 weeks away from work, but 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, 8 months, a year.
And the way work changes these days, it's highly likely that your workplace will have changed when you go back, whether there's a restructuring, there's different jobs, people taking on different roles. It can be a difficult time, and it can be made easier by effective policies.
There you go. Charity warning about the impact loneliness can have on parents and kids. A poll by Action for Children found a quarter of people felt cut off from friends since becoming a parent for the first time. Is there a new parent in your life that you could go and knock on the door, say, how's it going? They might offer you a cup of tea. Here's a top tip. Go make it yourself. It'll be easy for everybody. Lynn Collins, thank you for your time. Really appreciate you coming on the programme.
No problem.
Radio City Talk. Tackling the stigma.
Okay, so Mental Health Monday today. It's going to be a really interesting conversation, this one. Emma Cuddy joins us on the programme. Now, we've spoken a lot on the programme about how people can tackle some of the mental health issues that they face and whether or not there are things they can do in their lives to make their life a little bit easier. Emma, thank you for coming on the programme. Really appreciate you speaking to us.
Thank you very much for having me, Mick.
Just tell us about, Emma, some of the problems that you found yourself facing in life. What were the sort of issues that you were facing before you were able to find out exactly what they were about and take some action?
Yeah, so myself through Randox Health, I had my Randox Health Preventive Health Programme. And with one simple blood sample, I was able to find out that I was actually experiencing or living with an underactive thyroid condition. And prior to this, I was feeling very lethargic. I was having some fatigue. I had some weight gain, but also feelings of low mood and anxiety. And I had put this all down to lifestyle changes which had occurred in the previous few months, such as moving house, starting a new job and getting married. But what I didn't actually know was that I was living with this condition. And if I hadn't have had my Randox health check, I wouldn't have found out about this.
Yeah, just tell us about the mental health side of things then. What sort of feelings were you having at that time? Often people will think, you know, they feel a bit low, and like you did, put it down to, you know, changing jobs or changing house or just a, you know, tough time of it at work.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess I thought it was all going alongside the fatigue. So I was maybe finding it hard to get out of bed in the morning. Maybe I would have got slightly more frustrated than what I used to, or a little bit of irritability.
Yeah, just tell us about anxiety, because anxiety is one of those things which sits on a spectrum, doesn't it, which can affect people in many different ways. How did it affect you?
Sure, so I guess it just comes down to the irritability side of things. So maybe small things that previously wouldn't have annoyed me, and maybe I was getting more irritated about it, or I started to worry a little bit more about things that, again, previously I wouldn't have worried about, and especially at work as well. And that's something that we can see from the Thriving at Work report commissioned by Theresa May recently. Mental health issues is a huge thing now in the workplace. And we see that it reported that over 300,000 people with a long-term mental health problem now lose their job each year.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, because, of course, one of those things where if you've got a change in circumstances, a new job, a new role, you moved house, you know, I guess when you get to work, you think, well, I've just got to carry on as normal, because nobody else here cares whether or not, you know, I'm struggling under the new circumstances that I find myself in. But in your case, obviously, your employer was a lot more open to it. In fact, was happy to try and figure out for you maybe what some of those issues were.
Of course, yes. And that's back to the holistic approach of preventive healthcare, that we will take the approach that we want to screen the whole body health and not just one part of the body, as quite a lot of the time, especially with mental health issues as well, that there's actually an underlying condition there. So it might be better to treat that underlying condition as maybe opposed to the mental health condition itself.
I was going to say, Emma, have you changed the way then that you think about your own mental health now? You've had this experience and you've found, you know, through the investigative work that you've had going on, that actually your mental health, there's every chance that may well have been associated with your physical health. And that really sort of blurs the lines, doesn't it, that it's either physical health or it's mental health. We've got a combination of the two there, haven't we?
Definitely, yeah. I think that's a huge issue, and it really implies the importance of the holistic approach to testing the whole body health. And as well as that, we look at risk of disease and pre-illness as well. So we can measure up to 350 different biomarkers. And basically, biomarkers are little markers within your blood that can give us an indication of your overall health status, for example, your kidney health, your heart health, or your liver health. And all you have to do is provide one simple blood sample. What a lot of people don't realise is that quite a lot of the time with mental health issues, as I said, there's an underlying medical condition. And for example, we can test for vitamin deficiency, such as vitamin B12. And low levels or deficiencies in such vitamins and minerals can lead to mental health issues such as depression.
So tell me then, and this is the key question, Emma, how is your life different now? What do you do differently? What of changes have you made in your life? And then how do you feel as a result of that?
Well, certainly I'm a lot more aware of my own mental well-being and mental health. And again, that's another thing that was approached in the Thriving at Work report. And I think we all have to be aware of our own mental health and what we can do to maybe control it, and as well as that, the mental health of others and those around us.
So what's the biggest difference then that you've got in your life, would you say now?
Well, I would say now that I'm a lot more aware of testing other, so testing with regards to the whole body. And not only looking or approaching what I think it might be, but that there might be an underlying condition there. And as well as that, I'm a lot more aware of maybe when my mood is dipping and maybe when I have to go and see a health professional about that or get more testing done.
Yeah, because I think as well, if you spoke to people and you were to suggest there was a physical link to their mental health problems, I think for a lot of people, it would almost make things easier to understand. I think there's so much that's unknown about mental health at the moment and the way that we consider our own mental health. I wonder whether or not if people find themselves in a situation like you, Emma, it's actually quite helpful to say there's a physical change that you can make and that will have a positive impact on your mental attitude and your mental health.
Yeah. Well, as we know at the moment, you know, the health service is swamped with what we would regard preventative illnesses. So it's estimated that around 80% of premature cardiovascular disease, stroke and type 2 diabetes is actually preventable. So what we can do is actually identify risk of such conditions and prevent them from happening instead of waiting until they actually happen and have to treat them. So certainly the physical condition then in turn will lead to can lead to mental ill-being as well. So I think it's important that we look at the physical side of things as well.
I was going to say, when people go on these sort of health checks, there's a presumption, I think, for most people, you know, you get your blood tested and you know, your heart checked and your breathing and that kind of thing as well. Do you think that actually the repercussions or the potential for the knock-on implications for mental health is something that employers or people conducting these tests could actually take more seriously? And that could play out in many different ways. You know, it could play out, you know, a footballer going through a medical at a football club for the first time, somebody starting new employment, that actually things that flag up potential mental health issues might actually be beneficial to the employer to be sort of skilled to deal with any of the issues that may come up, but also to enable the employee to know that there is a risk, or if they are experiencing problems, there's a physical change that they might be able to make.
Certainly, I think as again referring back to that report, overall rate of sickness absence in the workplace has dropped by about 15-20% since 2009. However, the absence due to mental health issues has actually risen by about 5% in this period. So certainly it's an excellent approach for employers to take to ensure reducing the risk of absence due to mental health and other medical conditions.
And did it hurt when they took your blood?
No, not at all. Very simple, straightforward and pain-free.
Excellent. Maybe we should do, I could do one, I don't want to say live on the show because I think that would be too painful. It might be a little bit awkward and people might be squeamish about hearing it, but actually it'd be really interesting to find out whether or not there were things. I dread to think what might come up on mine, but you know, we shouldn't be afraid of the unknown.
No, definitely not. I guess there's two sets of people that maybe some don't want to know, but I definitely know that the feedback from our clients is very positive in that they've found it very informative and they've been able to take action on their own health before these conditions have actually occurred, and they're very grateful for that.
And in terms of the changes that you've been able to make in your life, Emma, were they major changes? Is there anything notable that's different in your life now in terms of maybe a little bit more exercise, maybe changing the way that you eat, that you think, well, actually now I can tell that has made a difference, I feel less anxious as a result of that?
Yes, definitely. It's given me the chance to take control of my overall health. I guess what you could say, it gave me a little bit of a kickstart in terms of eating a lot healthier and doing a little bit more exercise, and lost a bit of weight, because not only did I know I was living with a condition, but I was also made aware that it was a condition that could have other effects for me in terms of my heart health and things like this. So it has given me the kickstart to take control of my own health.
Emma, if people want to find out more information about the work that you do and Randox Health, where can they go?
Okay, so for more information on booking your preventative health programme, you can visit www.randoxhealth.com or free phone 0333 253 0736, and we will be opening a new clinic in Liverpool near you in the Exchange Station in the city centre, just in time for the Randox Health Grant National in April. And if you don't have a clinic in the meantime close to you, you can avail of our new state-of-the-art mobile clinic, which is available throughout the UK, where we can actually bring our preventative health service to you at the workplace or home or wherever suits you best.
Emma Cuddy, thank you for your time. Thanks for joining us on Mental Health Monday.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, let's just wrap up. Thank you to everybody who's been emailing the programme. Like I say, if you've emailed the show in the last week or so, I've been off for a week, so do send them in again and they'll jump straight to the top of the pile. Thanks to the guys at the Fallen Angels Dance Theatre, who are inviting local people in recovery from addiction to explore their stories and experiences this month. They've been leading high-quality dance theatre projects in the Liverpool area since being established 6 years ago, run by director Paul Bays-Kitcher, who uses dance theatre to help people recovering from addiction by raising awareness, breaking down stigma and advocating recovery. I think they were on one of the very first episodes we did of Mental Health Monday. The latest project is an opportunity for the company to reach out to more people locally through a funding deal with Paul Hamlin Foundation, Trust House Charitable Foundation and the Lindsbury Trust. The project launches at the LIC studio within Blue Coat in Liverpool City Centre. Now, it's underway with a story-gathering drama workshop with Dr. Zoe Zontu, the company's applied theatre researcher, and you can get on board with this one by simply searching fallenangelsdancetheatre.co.uk. You can also find them on Facebook, Twitter or Instagram. fallenangelsdancetheatre.co.uk or type in Fallen Angels Dance Theatre to Facebook, Twitter or Instagram. They're looking to get on board with people who are currently in recovery from addiction. Find out more about the work that they do online. Check them out on social media and the work done by Paul Bays-Kitcher and the Fallen Angels Dance Theatre team. Thanks to the guys for sending that across. Mental Health Monday, every single Monday here on Radio City Talk. Now, next Monday is the Mind Media Awards. Me and producer Lizzie are off to London because I'll be nominated for Journalist of the Year in that. So we'll give you an update, not in next week's show, because we won't know. But then the week after that, we'll know whether or not we've been recognised. But either way, it's nice to be nominated. We've got the Mind Media Awards. We're up for Journalist of the Year for Mental Health Monday. And we'll let you know about that in the next couple of weeks. mick@radiocity.co.uk if you want to get on board with the show today and share your story.
Radio City Talks Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.